This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Vayner Nation, how are you? It is me, Gary Vaynerchuk. Thank you so much for joining the audio experience. I have the great pleasure of having a guest on today that I am incredibly fond of. Normally, I would say probably 80% of the time, the guests that have come through here over the last 3 years have been people I don't really know, just a little bit from maybe a little interaction here and there on DM, but never a meal, never like lots of time. It's just, it's infrequent that I use the platform for people that I have more context for. And so I'm really excited today. Robert Hanson has become a friend, but most of all, and the reason I wanted to have him on the podcast and I asked him to be on the podcast is, I'm spending a lot of time around leadership. As a lot of you know, I haven't really announced this. As some of you in my Discord, if you're following VFriends, know, I do have a new book coming out in November. I'll give it a big promotion soon, so I'm not going to say any more here. But it made me really tap into emotional intelligence from a leadership standpoint. It's been always very clear to me. I've always put it out in my content. But the truth is, I haven't been close enough to enough executives to really feel like I'm willing to co-sign somebody. I have intuitions. If somebody said, who's a good leader? I throw out names because I have intuitions. But I really believe that this gentleman is a great leader, and I think he relies on a lot of the things that I rely on. And I think it's important to have my audience hear it in a different way, from a different perspective, with different nuances, because it's never going to exactly be the same. So Robert, with that incredibly big co-sign, why don't you take the floor for 3 minutes and tell everybody who you are, what you currently do, and maybe a little bit about yourself. And then I've got some questions for you with very specific agenda around some stuff that I want the audience to hear.
Sure, I'm happy to do it. Hey, Gary. Hey, everybody. And Gary, I appreciate that kind introduction. I'm currently running the wine and spirits business at Constellation Brands. I've been in business my whole career. I'll frame that up relative to the conversation you want to have, Gary, by saying I never really thought I would choose a business and career, a career in business. But what I realized is I think business has an opportunity to not only be a source of economic opportunity, but a force for positive change. So I was trained well early in my days. I was at Levi's for quite some time, and then I became a public company CEO. I ran a private equity backed jewelry business where I met Gary. Yep. The first time around, and we've developed a relationship. I think recently, obviously, we partnered as Constellation Brands acquired your Empathy brand, and we've been leveraging that to great success across our portfolio. But I think fundamentally, this is really about the sort of why behind success. And just as a lead into the conversation, I never expected to be here. I feel super blessed to have achieved the impact that I've had in business. And I often, am asked why. And I think it's the combination of aligning your passions to a higher purpose in business. And coming back to the point I made earlier, I do think business can be a source of economic opportunity, but can only be sustainably that if the business you're helming is a force for positive change. And that comes down to driving a culture of values-based high performance. And that's really what my brand is about. I'm a builder at heart. I've never worked in big companies where you're trading a SharePoint here or there with competitors. It's
you like the process of building it up.
I love the process of taking things and transforming them, or taking new things and building them up, but doing so from a values-based high-performance cultural perspective. That's me.
Here's a fun question. Middle school or high school, what did you think you were going to do? Don't take me that far back. Yeah. Even before college, do you recall? Did you have a sense? Did you have a feel?
I certainly did, and I made a very conscious choice not to pursue this. And don't hold me accountable in karaoke at some point in the future. But I was training to be a professional opera singer.
Wow.
When I was in middle school and high school, and then I chose life over that craft because it would have required dedicating my life.
When did you do that?
I was doing it all the way through. I was a competitive swimmer, and also I was studying, classic music and opera. And I made the choice not to really pursue either career as I went into college. So I would say in my junior to senior year of high school, I just said, I've got to choose life. I have a big curiosity and a high ambition to get exposed to as much as I can.
How did that land with coaches, parents, other relatives, friends? Like, if you were doing those, knowing a little bit about both of those things, just a little bit, those are big commitments. You've been probably doing them for a long time. Who struggled with that decision the most that was close to you?
You know, everybody, honestly, with the exception of my mom.
That's awesome.
My mom was like, you know, it's your life, man. You gotta grab it and live it the way you want to live it. I'll always love and respect you, but you've got to walk in your own shoes every single day. And if you can't do that authentically, then, you know, you're not going to be a happy person. So everybody from coaches to, you know, my opera coach to, you know, the rest of my extended family, I had an uncle that tried to chop me off at my knees for not pursuing, you know, my athletic career. So, but it all worked out in the end. I feel super blessed.
Speaking of working out in the end, and you said you were trained well, Levi's, I always think giving flowers is a nice thing, especially if the person's alive. Do you have a sense of which leader really impacted you in your professional career that you were like, oh, she or he, I like that. I like the way they're doing that. I want to emulate that. Or maybe they were maybe candorous to you, or who knows what. Does anybody stand out in that first 5 to 7 years?
Certainly, and look, I don't want to belabor this point, but I would have to recognize a series of people. My first, I would say, true professional coach was my original boss at Levi's, a woman named Julie Pally, and the division president that hired me, a guy by the name of Tom Faino, both who are around. And then, subsequent CEOs that were running the company, John Anderson, Phil Marino, as two examples, because they really instilled in me this concept of, I think, driving my career sort of horizontally to have vertical ascension. And that meant really just getting a lot of skills and experience, working domestically, working abroad, taking on different challenges. But they also, as leaders, instilled in me this concept of values-based high performance. I had one early on mentor who ran the international division, and I was thinking about moving into the public sector, and he's like, don't do that. You're a rare, you approach business in a rare way. And I think if you can really develop your career in business, you could have a bigger impact than a lot of non-government organizations or even governmental organizations on culture and on the development of society. So it was really interesting learnings early in my career. And then I had incredible mentors. You know, Mindy Grossman's one that comes to mind at WW. She's been a great mentor and coach over time. And I was exchanging with someone yesterday about Ursula Byrne. She was the CEO at Xerox at the time, and she took a cold call from me and just said she wanted to be of help. So, you know, long story short, I tell people all the time, people want to help, make the call. And people generally have a good heart and good values, and they want to be able to help. And I took advantage of that and feel super lucky to have had people like that in my life.
What do you think about, this is something I really admire in the way I watch. You know, obviously you are now managing at a higher level, but everybody falls underneath you. But, you know, John and Nate, my partners at Empathy, I mean, these are two kids I took out of college, and they worked every day of their life with me. Actually, John left and worked at a wine distributor for a year. But like 90% of John's career and 100% of Nate's career were under my cocoon, and they were close to me the whole time. And, you know, to think that they could get as fortunate as they did to land into your world where, you know, I think the greatest thing I do when I do it well is eliminate fear. And it has become so obvious to me in my interactions of watching you interact with others. And then obviously I have such a front row seat because I'm still very much big brother to those two. And so I get even more details in this 18 months, 2 years, whatever it's been now.
Probably more than you want.
No. Honestly, I mean this, you know, this is what's fun about my audience. Like, they know, like, I don't give a shit about anything other than like myself in the scheme of like, I'll never say something I don't believe in. And so, you know, why do you think you do a good job eliminating fear? Do you think you do a good job eliminating fear? And how much does that impact people being able to actually bring, you know, people say, bring your authentic self to work. And it pisses me off when companies do that because I'm like, fuck you. you know, you're not letting people do that. You're not making it safe because you've got this rule, that rule, this quota. And I think, you know, I think you're doing that and I like that. And I think it's interesting and I'm curious what your perception is to what I just said.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, there's a lot to unpack there. Maybe I'll say three things.
Please.
One, and I'll challenge a point that you just made, and others have made it to me as well. I just happen to believe it, you know, intrinsically. I do think you have to bring your authentic self to work in order to have the kind of impact that you want to have. Because I would say what I try to do with John and Nate is to role model what I say. And, you know, if I just go back to the, you know, first moment I stepped through the door of any organization I worked for, I decided to be an out gay man in business, which in the mid 80s wasn't such a popular thing back then.
No.
And it wasn't hard for me. You know, I'm a white guy that grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I worked for, you know, Levi's. I had an incredibly supportive family. So I get there was a lot of ease to that. But it was a conscious choice I made because I believe ultimately, if you want to create followership and you want to make sure that you're creating an environment which is more about love and innovation and creativity and, you know, courage and empathy and integrity, you have to lead authentically. And that means bringing your whole self to work. You have to be open and check yourself because you need to be a student of learning every day in order to lead a broad and diverse group of people. So that's kind of the first point. The second thing I would say is you have to lead with a level of authenticity to who you are and what your skill base is and what your passions are. And I mentioned to you earlier, I was a builder. I'm a builder. You know, that's if I had to use one word to describe myself, it's that. So I bring a level of intrapreneurialism, if you will, into large companies and then try to build the bridge between the larger organization and the more innovative mindset that an entrepreneur like you and they bring to bear, because that's where the formula for success is. And then root how to get to the outcomes that we need to deliver together in this concept of values-based high performance. I think if you're helping people be courageous, you know, authentic, creative, to operate with empathy, listening, you know, no pun intended to empathy, but it's one of my core values. And then, you know, obviously having integrity in how you show up, that creates a culture, even if it's demanding, that isn't fear-based. And I'll tell you, Gary, I mean, I get feedback all the time from the employees. People are fearful of something with me, but it's not they're afraid. They're fearful of disappointing.
Yeah, well, that's the dirty little secret for how we roll, right? Everything that people think they're getting out of fear, you actually get in reverse out of love, right? Like, I learned this because I had such opposite parents, right? And like, I saw it. My dad ran his company in a Soviet environment. Like, he thought, like, scaring people, like, you're gonna get fired, or it was just so in my face, and my natural DNA was so the opposite. And you're absolutely right, people, like, if somebody admires you, like, you don't want to disappoint them, which is a whole nother thing, because then you start having, it becomes chess, right? Like, when I figured that part out, I was like, oh shit, I gotta make them understand that they can't disappoint me in the result, they can only disappoint me in this or that. You know, it's like becomes a whole three-dimensional game of chess. Rob, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because I've had the luxury of owning my own business. For, you know, even when I was building it for my dad, I was making the calls and occasionally he would try to get in the way, but he knew better and he let me do my thing. So I've never really experienced having to be this person with having bosses. Right? In public company, numbers, like, you know, what is the, this is a fun question for me, because I actually don't even know where you're going to go with this.
But
when is it hardest to uphold your principles and your values? Because the reality is one of two things. It isn't in the benefit of the company's P&L, the company's body, like, you know, in the macro, diversity, kindness, of course it's going to impact it. But I'm talking in the micro sometimes. You know, I have delusional requests from my employees out of complete, like, ideology that would, like, literally put our company out of business. Like, I literally had an employee come in and be, Gary, Facebook and Netflix have this policy. We have to do it. I'm like, do you fucking understand that Facebook and Netflix makes more revenue in a day than we make? Like, do you understand that I can't do that? I'm like, I'm happy to do it. You're going to be looking for a job in 4 months. That was literally the conversation. Or let's be even more authentic. You have your life and your family, like something, you know, like when is it, meaning sometimes a decision, like if you were to do this, you will get fired. Like when is it hardest? Or what do you do when it's hardest where, you know, you have these ideologies, but you might have to bend a little bit in the micro to make the macro work. Like how do you go through all of that besides pouring a nice glass of wine from, you know, premium Mondavi from Tokalon to get through that decision? Like what, you know, what else, what do you do?
Look, one of the benefits of being in this business is you can pour a great glass of wine at the end of the day. Right. No, it's a great question. What I would say, and I don't want to answer in too simplistic of a way, maybe we can just riff back and forth and unpack it a little bit. But I think you come up against these moments where you have to make a choice and it's a juncture, you know, you've got to decide. And oftentimes I think what it is about, Gary, is are you able to bend because you can keep on the course to the outcome that you're looking to deliver, both in terms of shareholder value creation and building a high performance values based culture? Or is it something that's truly going to break your brand of leadership and your commitment to driving the right returns in the right way? And so I always come to really simple, you know, principles. Don't compromise your values. Don't take shortcuts. Don't go for a short-term victory that's not sustainable, because you should also always be building organizations that are going to be better for your time of leadership and will be sustained as a result. And if you start bumping up against those questions and you can't answer with a really firm yes, that you're taking the right decision because it's the right decision culturally, it's the right decision contextually, it's the right decision from a value standpoint, it's going to deliver sustained, you know, profitable revenue growth for your shareholders and especially for your employees. If you can't answer those questions, then you're making the wrong choice. And it should be really, really simple. Doesn't mean you shouldn't be flexible and agile, and you shouldn't, there's no straight line to an outcome. You're always taking a windy road to get where you try to get to. But when you're taking too big of a curve, and you could crash or break, and you just need to listen to that inner voice and always follow, essentially follow your authentic values and authentic self.
Robert, let's go a little fun for a little bit. What's been the most fascinating thing that has happened in the last 5 to 10 years, 3 years, you know, 2 years with the consumer drinking wine let's just use America. I'll go first in a little way. I'm still, because I grew up in the business my whole life, just completely blown away that rosé got there for years, right? Basically from the time I was 14 to the time when I left kind of full, true day-to-day wine library, which I always say is 2011, even though VaynerMedia started in 2009. So in 2011, you know, I couldn't believe that, you know, even at 36 years old, like my whole career, and rosé still wasn't happening. And the fact that it's happened and it's really happened is just mind-blowing. But let's go a little bit more contemporary. Last 2-3 years, what has surprised you or been most interesting or caught you off guard or you think is really cool? Like when I talk about the consumer, what's going on there? And you can go broad. Obviously Constellation goes way beyond wine with beer and spirits. Like what's caught your attention of like, wow, I never saw that coming, or I can't believe how big this category's gotten, or it's really interesting to see people do.
Yeah, you know, look, I mean, a lot, there are a few macro level trends, and you covered rosé. I think I've been struck by how strong of a sort of sensory appetite people have for really fruit forward, really yummy cabs and red blends, and that's from the very, very high end all the way through to an incredible value table wine with a similar sensory, which is slightly sweeter. So that I think has really driven a lot of consumption over the last several years. But the thing that's been most interesting to me is seeing the market bifurcate. People are demanding incredible quality and really tasty product, you know, at the lower end from a price segment standpoint. You know, if you can economically afford to buy a $10 bottle of wine, you deserve an incredible bottle of wine. And then the high end. And the high end is not only in wine, but in craft spirits. But the thing that is most disruptive right now is, I would say, just all, you know, alternative adult beverage, you know, thinking about ready to drink pack formats in wine, thinking about ready to drink in spirits, you know, even a big disruptive category to the beer and wine category like seltzer. The consumer's in charge. And I think it's fun because it's demanding. And companies that are innovative and agile will get there. And then if you layer on top of it, you know, your whole, you know, career has been, at least in the wine and spirits business, but I think really broadly, has been built this way. The consumer's in charge, you know, direct to consumer, omni-channel, social digital technology. It's all about being with the consumer, understanding, because of what you learn from them day in and day out, what they're looking for, what they like, what they don't like, and being able to respond quickly and also to surprise and delight them in ways that they didn't expect. But it's those big macro trends that really, I think, have stood the industry on its ear.
What about a different thing? Talk to me about your personal, Robert Hansen, personal social media life.
Yeah.
TikTok, Instagram. Actually, as a big executive, something I'd love to hear from you, how much do you post or how much do you consume content on LinkedIn? Let's start there, actually. I'll take advantage of having you here. You and your, you know, what's going on in LinkedIn for you? And have you sensed over the last 2-3 years its rise as a content play in the business world and your contemporaries or other things of that nature? Thoughts on LinkedIn?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, I'm a huge user of LinkedIn. I tend to post around tentpole moments that are really important to me personally. That you know, I've posted on most recently on moments where there has been a cultural context where I think business and society have converged a lot about the social unrest that we've been dealing with, a lot about the issues relative to how, you know, communities of color, particularly African Americans and Blacks, have been treated. But those moments are important to me because I think I'm very committed personally, and I think the company is, to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I tend to use LinkedIn for that purpose.
Do you ever go fund business in LinkedIn? Will you ever talk about like a report you saw, or because you've been in fashion and other areas?
Although I will tell you that, to answer your broader question, and this is maybe a little lazy, you could challenge me on this because of who you are and what you do, but I tend to be a social and digital media voyeur. You know, my husband has like a crazy amount of Twitter followers, not Gary Vaynerchuk, for you know, a man with a pretty strong point of view and a wicked tongue and sense of humor. You know, he's got quite a lot of following. So I use Twitter as my news source. I use, you know, I use Instagram, you know, as my predominant social platform. I am an observer on TikTok. I'm really fascinated by how people behave and kind of what works and doesn't work and the implications to society and business. But I tend to be more of a voyeur there, and I use LinkedIn predominantly.
And what about podcasts? You consume?
I'm a big consumer of podcasts.
What are your favorite podcasts? Whether they're entertainment and escapism, or whether they're business, like what do you actually listen to?
I tend to listen to podcasts that are going to help sort of expand my horizons personally. I am so, from a business standpoint, I'm talking to you. I listen to everything you put out. I listen to a lot of the influencers in my business world. So when I'm personally consuming podcasts, I tend to go to my passion points, you know, whether it's food, whether it's you know, travel, whether it's sort of just expanding my understanding of a particular topic where I may not have the level of skill
That's
or experience
cool.
that I'd want.
What about OTT? What about Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max? What is Robert watching these days?
Oh God, I get in so much trouble personally for this. I'm a voracious binge watcher, so I will go in and go hard. So everything from, you know, Ted Lasso to,
love,
you know,
Ted Lasso.
I was one of the few people that could stomach seeing, you know, The Handmaid's Tale all the way through because I love the sociopolitical commentary about it. You know, you name it,
Queen's Gambit.
Oh my God, the Queen's Gambit. I required the thing I asked for the most because I didn't have one for some reason, or at least
chess
it's not
board.
It was a chessboard. Yes. That's what I got as one of my Christmas presents last time around. The Queen's Gambit was amazing. Love it. So those kinds of programs. And if I want to be particularly sort of just playful, I watch Hell's Kitchen a lot.
I love that. He's so brilliant. I love that. Empathy, right? We did the transaction together. You said it quickly, so I want to bring it up. When did you know that word? You know, it's funny. What a word for me. Like, so much of what is good to me in life is based on that word, hence why I wanted to name the wine that. Incredibly interesting to look at the Google search terms and things of that nature. What an underused word in our society, and now is just so in the zeitgeist, gets thrown around and misunderstood, I think, sometimes as sympathy or you know, other things. Like, when did that word really resonate to you? And then more importantly, why do you actually think it matters so much in business? Because I'd like to think people can understand why it should matter in life, but like in business.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, I'll come full circle and sort of, you know, I know we're getting close to the time you have. So, you know, you asked about the mentors that I had early in my career. What was interesting to me is I was always taught from my mom and from my personal life, empathy matters a huge amount. Treat people with respect, listen to them, demonstrate empathy. No matter who you are, you owe that to the people that you come across in life. So that was instilled in me personally. And then in business, when I first started working with the people I mentioned earlier, we spent a lot of time on values and we were asked to explore our personal values. And the five that always come up, which were aligned with every organization, except for when I made a mistake personally in context, we can talk about that next time, is my values are clear: courage, creativity, authenticity, integrity, empathy. And it was well before I got to know you and was surprised by the way that you named, you know, the wine brand that you launched with John and Nate. It is fundamental to who I am.
I agree.
And I meditate every day. And a lot of people I know do. And part of my meditation is really focusing on those values and making sure that I'm living them every day and reminding myself which ones have lapsed. And oftentimes empathy is the hardest one because it requires patience, a commitment to listen and to hear other people's stories. And it's always been important to me. And I think it makes better leaders in business.
Robert, what if I asked you, because I'm just trying to bring as much value as possible, I think this one can really land for a lot of people. I'm excited about it, actually. What is the most common mistakes you see in leaders? Right, what's so fun about your position, and I have it too, is you get to be the leader of leaders. Super fun for me. Like, I'm watching, I have some great leaders, but it's fun. I get to like learn so much. Now that I've got scale, I get to learn so much. I used to have to, when you're a smaller company, you're pretty much the leader. And like, you know, and like now I'm at a different place where I'm truly leading leaders. You in your position have led and continue to lead leaders. What is a very common, call it 2018 to 2022, because I want to contextualize it, like a recent thing. If I said to you, what do you see the leaders, what is the mistake you see? Up close and personal, or like maybe parallel, or people you're friends with. What is the most common mistake with an S, or just one that really stands out for you that like people get caught up or tripped up on?
Yeah. You know, the one that is the most obvious to me is leaders who set an agenda but don't make it our collective agenda, make it their agenda.
Right.
Because when they do that, even if the strategy's right and they built the right operating and financial plans, they can't get the culture and the people necessary for followership, and so it falls apart. So that's one. The second thing I would say is assuming they've created alignment and everyone's kind of bought in, the challenge I think a lot of leaders face is their level of impatience, and they can outpace, and this is an issue I have to watch all the time, they can outpace the capability of their team. So you gotta orchestrate the performance for the team so that people can achieve goals and, you know, not burn themselves out and have full lives and all that stuff. And the third thing I would say, and this is the toughest one, I think there's an A job out there for everybody. And oftentimes leaders don't recognize when they're asking somebody to do something they either can't or don't want to do.
Right.
And I think making the call, because it's actually the most empathetic thing to do, is making a call to help someone understand it's time to find that next A job. And I believe that. I really think there's an A job out there for everybody. It may not be the current assignment. So those are the three things I see that people make mistakes around. And when I really get other leaders talking and they're open and vulnerable, they would say a version of what I just shared.
Robert, this was super enjoyable. It went in 2 seconds. I wish you nothing but health and happiness, brother. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Same to you, man. Great to talk to you.
As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people. You know, it's so funny. People that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness, I'm going to have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks so much, Gary. Today's amazing review reads, "Gary, I love your content. This is the realest entrepreneur that you can listen to. Highly recommend you give this podcast a listen. You won't be disappointed." Thank you so much for that kind review. And to anybody else listening out there, if you leave us a review, you might just get shouted out in the next episode.